The Turn of the Screw by Henry James. Copyright Ailey 2010. Prologue. Two Turns of the Screw. It was Christmas Eve, and there we were, listening to the story, sitting around the fire, holding our breath, and, except for one or two comments about the scariness of the tale, generally very quiet. Everything was as it should be. The story was strange, the house was old. Someone said that this was the only story he remembered where a child had been involved. It was the tale of an apparition, which had taken place in a house very like the one where we were staying. A small child, asleep in his room, had been woken up by the appearance of this terrible apparition. The child's terrified screams had woken the mother, and, as she went to calm her child, she had seen the exact same thing. The observation that it was unusual for such stories to involve children seemed to interest Douglas, and I thought he might have a story he wanted to share, so I waited. Just before we all went to bed, he explained what was on his mind. I quite agree that Griffin's story of the ghost, or whatever the apparition was much more interesting because it first appeared to the little boy. I know of another similar story involving a child. If the child gives the effect another turn of the screw, what do you think about a story involving two children?
We say, of course, somebody exclaimed, that they give two turns of the screw, and that we want to hear about them.
I can see Douglas standing in front of the fire, looking at us with his hands in his pockets. Nobody except me, until this moment, has ever heard this story. It is absolutely horrible. Several people, naturally, thought this made the prospect even more exciting, and our friend, with great skill, looked at each of us in turn and said, "It's worse than anything. Nothing at all touches it." "For terror?" I remember asking. "For dreadfulness.
"Oh, how delicious!" cried one of the women.
He took no notice of her. "For general ugliness and horror and pain."
"Well then," I said, "just sit right down and begin."
He turned to look at the fire and watched it for a moment. Then he turned to us again.
"I can't begin. I shall have to send to town for it."
Everyone groaned in disappointment, so he explained. "The story's written. It's in a locked drawer. I could send the key to my servant and ask him to send the envelope to me here." It seemed as if he wanted us to encourage him, to stop him from hesitating. He had broken the ice. Ice which had formed over many winters. The others were irritated that they couldn't hear the story immediately, but I asked him to write first thing the next morning so that we could hear it as soon as possible. Then I asked whether the story had happened to him.
"Oh, thank God, no," he answered quickly.
"And were you the person who wrote the story down?"
"No. I have the impression here," he put his hand on his heart, "I've never lost it."
"Then your manuscript is in old faded ink and in the most beautiful handwriting." He paused. "A woman's. She has been dead for 20 years. She sent me the story before she died." They were all listening.